There we go. This is Michael O'Rourke with the Oregon Historical Society interviewing Janet Lamos on June 8th, 1988. This is tape 3, side A. Okay, one thing I did want to talk to you a little bit more about also is we just touched on it. In fact, you were telling me about the role or the senator and his wife were able to rely upon their faith during the Sackos crisis. Maybe you could tell me just a little bit more about how that plays a daily role in their lives, maybe starting with the senator, and the way in which it shows up even at work in the office.
Senator's faith is just such a natural part of his life. It's just almost hard, it's such a part of his person, it's almost hard to pull out that one aspect and examine it. He talks about how when he was younger and in the Navy, he was just sort of wild and did everything that everybody else does, maybe even to a greater extent. Or he just says to me sometimes, I was very sinful. And then some college students confronted him when he was dean at Willamette and just talked to him about Jesus Christ and the senator, just as they talked, just realized that he needed just a real need for Jesus Christ in his own life and to ask him to forgive his sins, etc., everything that's involved in that. And
do you remember who these students were?
I know Doug Coe was one of them. I'm not sure who else confronted him, and or who else was in that group. And they just sort of were real natural about it. It wasn't a real big thing. And the senator had grown up in a Baptist home. His parents both had a deep faith, but just like many people, he just wanted to live his own life and be his own self and not necessarily go to church because his parents wanted him to or whatever, or to please them. So he just recognized the need. And I know that when he met Mrs. Hatfield and they were dating and then got married, it was in the 50s, she was Catholic and she became a Baptist when she married him, and that was a difficult time because she was ostracized by her church, by the Catholic Church. So it was difficult for both of them. But anyway, Senator Hatfield has a deep faith. In fact, he's known, someone may have mentioned to you already, as the conscience of the Senate, that he is known for being a very moral man. And he starts each day by going to Mass. Even though he's not Catholic, he goes to Mass every morning, or almost every morning. And I know he prays for his staff every day, or has a group of friends that he prays for, and just sort of gives the day over to the Lord. And he's not a preachy type of person. He's not, as I said, he's very natural with his faith. And when he talks to the staffs, like in staff meetings every once in a while, he'll say, well, like in the staff meeting that he had on Monday when he came back from Oregon, he went to a mill where the owner of the mill recognized that some of the men had quit school and were illiterate. So he set up a program for after work where the men could go and learn how to read. There are about like 7 men in the program. And he was watching this one man who was showing him some of the things that they learn. And the man had put 8 times 2 on his computer and had needed to come up with the answer. And the senator was watching him, and he said, I felt like the Lord sort of told me this man does not know what the answer is. And so the senator asked him a question and sort of moved on. And the man turned around and said, I have a hard time with multiplication. Well, the man could not figure out what that was, what 8 times 2 was. So then the center moved down, and it was really neat because it took the pressure off the man. It was a real sensitive thing for the center to realize. And just said, you know, the Lord helped him realize that. And that's how he is with his faith. It's just very natural. It's not spooky or naturally comes up.
Mm-hmm. I think it's true that some members of the senator's staff share his faith, and others do not. Does that? In what ways do the two different groups in the office interact, and how does the senator interact with both of them?
When I first came onto the staff, I think that difference was emphasized a little bit more. It was sort of in a joking way where they would call all of us the Christians versus the lions.
Okay.
The group of people that I first worked with when I came on called us the Christians and the lions, and there was always sort of a joke about it. I worked in, they called just the typing pool, which then was the back room. I think there were 4 of us back there, 3 people typing. There may have been 4 and 1 person doing the mail. We're right next to the legislative room, and sometimes we could hear really heated discussions going on. That was right sort of during the Wes Michelson time, right after that. But now I don't think there's such a pronounced difference. If there is anything, I think that at first sometimes people that do not share the senator's faith almost feel a little bit insecure or feel like, well, they're not, maybe there's an in crowd of people that share the senator's faith. And I think they soon discover that there really is not. There's an understanding that people that have the same faith share, just like people that have same interests would share. You know, there's a camaraderie there. There's an understanding that wouldn't necessarily be, but I don't think that there's a real pronounced difference. In fact, one time Senator Hatfield said to me that sometimes Christians can sort of they can sort of say, well, the Lord's going to lead me when I get up to this situation, and they don't always think something through, whereas people that are not, do not have maybe a deep faith, are not relying on the Lord, would think something through thoroughly. And he said that he wants to rely on that too, that that's very good.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you think that when you said that that there really isn't a difference in terms of the security or the access that the Christians versus the lions have to the senator. It would seem, though, that because of that special camaraderie, that perhaps the Christian part of the staff might be a bit closer to him in some ways, don't you think?
It could be. Senator Hatfield makes a great effort to treat everyone equally, though, and to not special anybody else out for single anybody out for special attention.
When they're looking for say a new staff member, is there an attempt either to maintain a balance between the Christians and the lions, or perhaps an attempt if a qualified person applies who does share the senator's faith, would that person be hired over another person?
No. In fact, right now, I think there's probably a smaller percentage of Christians than there has been in the past. It just depends. A lot of times people apply to work on the senator's faith, and I was drawn to him because I knew he had a faith in Christ. I may not have been interested in working for him otherwise, so that some people that apply may have that interest. Jerry told me once that he hires people. When he talks to them, he tries to hire them people that he knows would be compatible, or the type of person that would be compatible in our office. So sometimes it ends up, you know, they end up being Christians, but they are not hired because of it. They're not asked about it, and And sometimes we don't, will say to me, I think that person's a Christian. And I'll say, oh, really? You know, maybe after they've been on staff for a while. Mm-hmm. But it's not, there's not an issue made of it.
For the most part, though, his legislative assistants have been in the Christian group, I think. Isn't that the case?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, okay. It's let's see. It's now Jim Toohey in that position. And
oh, I see. You mean legislative directors.
Director.
Right, right. And it's interesting because Jim Toohey is a Catholic, very devout Catholic. People in that position previously have usually been Protestants. Now, Steve Hickok is not a Christian. He was legislative director for a period of time.
Okay, so there have been exceptions at least.
Right. Mm-hmm. At least one.
What about, I've had the opportunity to look through some of the papers and communications that have come out of the senator's office, and I noticed, it seemed to me that maybe he makes an attempt when talking to the White House or relating to, you know, other branches of government, etc., to at least not skip over the spiritual issue and perhaps to bring it up, in fact, so that it isn't overlooked in the legislative process. Do you think that that's the case?
I think, again, that his faith is such a natural part of him that it is not put on. I don't think that he deliberately tries to incorporate his faith or any spiritual references. I don't think he tries to put them in things, but I don't think he would try to leave them out either. A lot of times in speeches, one of his themes will be we are stewards of the earth, that we're put here to take care of it. We don't own it. We didn't create it. But we're here to be, that God gave us stewardship over it. And I mean, and that is just a natural spiritual he refers to that in a natural way. And I mean, that, and it's not put on. I don't think he tries to make an attempt to delete it or add it. Mm-hmm.
Can you think of other times, you mentioned and we've talked about the Sakos affair, but can you think of any other times maybe when he was in particular need or where he was being, had a particularly big challenge in front of him where he might have turned to his faith to look for strength?
I think when there's tragedy, at one point, Marco was a chauffeur for then Governor Reagan in California, and then went on to work on the advance team in the White House. And Marco was out one night with one of his friends, and they were in a terrible, terrible automobile accident, and they both should have been killed. And it just so happened that neither of them had their seatbelts on, and the car went off the road into a tree, went up in the air, and smashed up like an accordion. If they'd had their seatbelts and had been locked in, they both would have been killed. But as it was, the doors popped open from the pressure, and both boys fell out. And Marco had, his leg was crushed, and his bone was shattered, and it was all put back together. Again, the guy that was driving too fast, and whole thing. And I just remember the senator then even talking to his children and talking to all of us about, you know, we never know. Life is a gift, and we never know from one minute to the next if we're still going to be alive. And at that time in particular, he was very emotional, and just really relying on his faith. He was aware of how close Marco had come. Mm-hmm. And I think in other, when close friends die or, you know, a natural time when one would turn to one's faith.
To what extent, because of the realization that the senator does have this strong faith, to what extent do religious groups and or persons come to him when they want to, you know, maybe accomplish something on Capitol Hill?
Actually, he is not on the good side of a lot of religious groups because I think I mentioned earlier about the abortion thing where it seemed like he was against that he was for abortions when he was against the amendment because he didn't want to slow down the appropriations process. So a lot of religious quote-unquote people misinterpret the way he votes, or they don't like him because he doesn't support the president 100%, and they think he's anti-God and anti-religion. So I don't really see a lot of religious groups approaching him. He is asked to speak a lot of religious colleges that probably if he were not a Christian, he would not be asked to speak. And like the National Association of Evangelicals have had him speak a few times to them. But I don't really see Christians coming to him or particular Christian interest groups.
Now, Jimmy Carter is someone who also had a real faith when he came to his office. Did that lead to any special, link between the senator and Jimmy Carter, do you think?
No, I think that, I don't even know if they shared their faith with each other. I think that they may have. There was not a lot of closeness. Jimmy Carter was quite an isolated man, I think, sort of prided himself on not being from Washington. He did not really court Congress the way that Reagan has done. If he had, maybe there would have been some sharing of their faith, but he was a very reserved and formal man, and I think kept his distance.
Mm-hmm. Thing that probably will be through. You mentioned that Marco had worked for Governor Reagan, both as chauffeur when he was governor, and then later on in the White House. So it would seem that there has been a relationship that goes back several years between the Hatfields and the Reagans. Can you talk a little bit about personal relationship?
That was not really an in, I don't think, because Marco worked more for Mr. Deaver. He knew Mr. Deaver. But there wasn't, I don't think it really impacted on the Hatfields and the Reagans. The Hatfields were invited several times to the White House, but because Senator Hatfield differed with the president, Senator Hatfield was not on their most desired guest list. I remember, Marco, I think, is probably more conservative than his father, and there's been some good teasing between them about the Reagans and the different viewpoints. So I don't think that impacted at all. He might as well have been working, as a waiter, almost, because there really was not any, it didn't really impact the relationship, I don't think.
Do you think that some of the senators' stance, such as, you mentioned already, I think, the respect for the earth, do you think maybe some of his foreign policy stance are developed out of his spiritual base, respect for life, and that?
Partly, he tells a story, you may have heard it, that he was among the first groups of people to come into Hiroshima after the bombing. And he just said that he remembers the horrible silence and just the horrifying sight all around him, and that impacted him, which changed his life. So I think it was that, and that was before he had formed his faith. So I think that had more of an impact. And then when he became a Christian and then just studied the life of Jesus, where more he realized that more was accomplished through love than through fighting.
That, I believe, is another bone of contention maybe between certain religious groups.
Exactly, yeah.
And the senator, because they, I think that like the moral majority sort of see like the communist part of the world as being godless and therefore something to be fought against.
Right.
Which is a considerably different position from the senators.
Exactly, and so the senator greatly threatens them.
Okay. One other question, actually, that about relationships with other, well, specifically with Richard Nixon. Do you know much about their relationship, the senator and Richard Nixon's?
The senator has a nice story to tell about that. When he, I can't remember what year it was. In the early 70s, Senator Hatfield spoke. There's a national presidential prayer breakfast every year where the president and his cabinet and the Congress and religious leaders from around the world are invited to a breakfast. And they always have a prominent speaker. And Senator Hatfield was the speaker this one year. And in the speech, he spoke out against the Vietnam War. And President Nixon was sitting there, and Haldeman, Ehrlichman, the whole group, and they were just, he said he could just see them with their arms, you know, folded and just black looks on their face. Well, then Senator Hatfield was blacklisted. And in fact, Chuck Colson later tells how one of his jobs then was to dig up whatever dirt he could about Mark Hatfield to try to get him out of office. And then Watergate occurred, so that all fell through the cracks, and that did not come about. So President Nixon hated Mark Hatfield and everybody down there. Well, on Christmas, I think it was either Christmas night or Christmas Eve. I think it was Christmas night. Senator Hatfield received a call from President Nixon. And Senator Hatfield said, of course, had not respected Nixon for what he had done, the Vietnam War, he was against him for that, just many things, but he said, and he knew he was blacklisted, knew that they were out to get him. And yet the president called him, obviously seeking acceptance, wanting to talk to him, and just sort of, I'm not exactly sure what the purpose was of the call, other than just to make contact. And Senator Hatfield said, what could I do? I couldn't not forgive him. That would be, you know, that's going against everything that I know of Christ, and that he had to just forgive him in his heart. And he talked to him and showed him respect. And then periodically, President Nixon would just call Senator Hatfield about one thing or another, and that has continued to this day. Till when, you know, the president has a new book out, he'll send it to Senator Hatfield. Again, Senator Hatfield, I think I mentioned earlier, is not the type of person that's buddy-buddy, neither is Nixon. They're both reserved. And yet I think that Senator Hatfield has a great deal of respect for President Nixon's foreign policy knowledge, and he believes he's just a real expert. And in fact, has suggested that it would be wonderful if somehow we could draw upon that knowledge, if that was one of his strong points. So that's basically describes the relationship.
And yet, in terms of the actual implementation of foreign policy, I would guess that Senator Hatfield had a lot of trouble with some of Nixon's policies.
Exactly.
And so how would...
So it wouldn't be drawn upon maybe his implementation of, but his knowledge of, for instance, Russian leaders, or they're just, he just feels like he's an expert in that field, but not necessarily to draw policy, but just to draw on his knowledge of foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Chuck Colson. He's somebody who actually underwent religious conversion,
right,
during the Watergate times, I believe, or shortly afterwards.
That is another interesting story that Senator Hatfield tells. Chuck Colson hated Mark Hatfield and was out to get him, and Senator Hatfield knew that. And then Chuck Colson hitting bottom forced him to, and I think he was, I don't remember exactly his story of conversion, but I know he was confronted with the gospel and wanted and accepted Christ. And he also knew Doug Coe. This is just this little fellowship of believers, and knew Doug Coe, or knew somebody who knew Doug Coe. And Doug Coe knew what he had done to Senator Hatfield. Well, Doug Coe is a great reconciler and wanted to get Chuck Colson and Senator Hatfield together, because now they both shared this faith. Senator Hatfield really didn't have any interest in it, didn't really want part of it. So he tells the story about how a group of men were in the chapel. I can't even remember what the setting was, why they were there. Or maybe this group of men had decided it would be good to get together and pray together for the nation or whatever. So they were meeting in the chapel in the Capitol. And Senator Hatfield was in there, and you know, they were all sitting around this little circle with their head, they were praying. And there was a chair next to Senator Hatfield that was empty. So the senator heard somebody come in but did not look up to see who it was, and sensed that the person took the chair next to him. And when whoever was praying finished and they all kind of looked up, Senator Hatfield looked, and sitting next to him was Chuck Colson. And he and Doug Coe was at this little meeting, and he invited Chuck Colson. And Senator Hatfield was in the same situation that he was with President Nixon. He said, "There he was, how could I not forgive him?" And that's part of it. You can't forgive and not, if you do not forgive, you sin. And if you do forgive, then you are reconciled. And so they did, and they talked, and everything is fine between them now. I think there's a real mutual respect and admiration between them now.
And there's a continuing relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.